All right, welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast. I'm Taylor Haas, joined by Dave Molinari in Philadelphia. Tom Reed will not be with us for the first segment. He's on the road. He'll join us in the second and the third segment. The third segment, we're also going to be joined by longtime Flyers hockey writer Wayne Fish to talk more about the Flyers. But right now in this segment, we're going to talk about the Penguins' loss to the Flyers on Monday night. Dave, you're there. What is your headline from this game?
Oh, probably nothing that should be said in public. I mean, that was one of the worst displays the Penguins have had all season. They lost the opening faceoff and pretty much everything that followed. They registered a brief pulse at the start of the third period and looked like they might actually be coming back against a team that has really been struggling lately. But after getting within two goals, they couldn't close the gap anymore and ended up losing by five, which was probably a pretty fair representation of how their evening went.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the shot totals, I mean, the first and the second period combined, they allowed, I think it was 37, and then they did limit the Flyers to eight in the third. I mean, just what did you see? What was happening defensively tonight?
Not much.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't have affected the shot total, but the goals against total could have been worse if Casey DeSmith hadn't played pretty well in those first two periods. They were just devoid of structure defensively in the first two periods. It would have been a pretty shabby performance had this been the first preseason game. It was quite a surprise that they would come out and play that way in such a high stakes game. They've been trying to at least get home ice advantage for the first round of the playoffs, if not win the division. But instead, they ended up playing a lot like I kind of expected the Flyers to, based on their performances of late.
Yeah, and then the Capitals did win in New York, so they are tying the division again. Yeah, Casey DeSmith played well. He left after the second period due to undisclosed lower body injury. Really not clear when or how that might have happened because he did finish the period. I mean, they sure put him to work those first two periods, so could have happened anywhere. But Evgeny Malkin, he came back. Dave, what did you see from him in his return?
Nothing, really striking. There were a couple of brief flashes of his old self, but he certainly didn't do anything to greatly distinguish himself tonight. Not that any of his teammates did either. I thought, Sidney Crosby scored a really, really nice goal to make it 4-1. But other than that, he had a really forgettable performance, was especially bad on faceoffs, which has been a strength of his for most of the season. It was just there just was not a whole lot out of this game that the Penguins are going to want to take away, with the possible exception of they got a couple of goals from their power play, which might be give them a flicker of encouragement, but other than that, this was a 60-minute write-off for them.
Yeah, 2-for-4 on the power play. With Malkin bumping McCann from the top unit. I know, maybe some people were concerned not that adding Malkin to the top unit would be a bad thing, but just maybe disrupt that kind of chemistry that they've had. And because McCann's been so good. But yeah, like you said, faceoffs are really not great for anyone, really. I mean, they finished 32% overall as a team. Pluger was 20%, Malkin was 35%, Crosby was 21%. Jeff Carter was the only one that wasn't, in the negatives. He was 50%. But, I mean, you mentioned Crosby's goal on the power play, but, I mean, 5-on-5, would you call this like a slump that he's been in? Does he look himself? I mean, because if you look at you know, especially the in this game, the top line, the shot attempt differential, like it was not good. It was the first line was pretty bad.
No, he hasn't looked himself for a few games now, and you wonder, you know, I suppose it's possible that fatigue is catching up with him. I mean, it has been a condensed schedule. I believe he's only missed one game, and he plays a lot of minutes. So you might wonder if he's getting a bit tired at what I believe age 33 now, or, you know, does he possibly have some sort of injury that's not severe enough to force him out of the lineup, but, you know, is affecting his play? I guess we'll probably never get an answer to that, but whatever the case, he hasn't been performing at his customary level for a few games now.
Yeah, and then I guess last thing before we move on, this is Mark Friedman's first game back since he had a concussion. He did confirm it was a concussion. They put him on his offside just right in Matheson's place for the next game. Would you keep him there? Would you try Ricola, Ruido, POJ, anyone? What would you think?
Well, I was a little surprised that they decided to go with Friedman over Ruidel today. Ruidel, certainly I like him better on the right side, but I think he can handle himself on the left. Friedman does have a stated preference, I believe, for the left side, but he had missed, I want to say, the previous 26 games. So to throw him into that position and expect him to contribute might have been a bit much. And, you know, I don't think he was particularly awful. I don't know that he was any worse than anybody else, but I don't know that he was any better either. So I certainly wouldn't blame them if they would plug Ruidel in there Tuesday night, but you never know. You could... you can go crazy trying to some personnel moves from time to time.
Yeah. All right, that's good. We'll have to see. We'll be joined in the second segment. Tom Reed's going to join us. We're going to look ahead to potential playoff matchups for the Penguins. Luckily for the Penguins, the Flyers, we're not going to be in that conversation. So stay tuned. Stay tuned with us.
Welcome back to the 66-87 podcast here on DK Sports Radio. Normally here in our second segment, we bat around three or four different topics. But right now, I think everyone's kind of looking forward to what's going to come up here in about a week or two with the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we're just going to get into one issue today. Just looking at the three teams, we now know who the other teams for sure are going to be in the playoffs with the Penguins in the divisional round. That's Washington. That is the Islanders, and that is the Boston Bruins. So let's break down each team, and we'll go with each person going back and forth as far as the strengths and weaknesses and how that kind of relates to whether if they would play the Penguins, because the one thing we still don't know is who the Penguins are going to meet in the first round, because those if all you have to do is look at the standings and still – lots can change, and there's teams that have still have games in hand, and those standings can change. Let's start with the Washington Capitals. Obviously, the Penguins just came off a nice two-game sweep of the Capitals without Alexander Ovechkin and without John Carlson. Taylor, when you look at this team, what impresses you about them, and what tells you, hey, maybe the Capitals can get out of the division this year, in which they division they couldn't get out of last year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Ovechkin and just all the scoring threats they have, really good power play. It could be a high scoring series. Weaknesses, I mean, their goaltending has been a question for a lot of the season. Vanacek, he was on a little run there, but then, I mean, he didn't look great in that series, in that game, the last game in Washington. I think that might be their best matchup. I mean, if you look at the entire season series, I mean, the Penguins had a really, they have a really good record against them in the regular season this year. I think that's probably their least likely opponent though in the first round. So maybe that might be a second round matchup. But I think if I were the Penguins, I'd want to play in the first round just based off of what we saw in the regular season.
And just the uncertainty with the goaltending. I think we had a guest on recently that from the AP he was saying the same thing, that goaltending is, you look at it and you're not quite sure who's going to be in net from day to day, I would think, from game to game.
Taylor, yeah. That's, I mean, we saw both the goaltenders in that last series there. So, I mean, like you said, they don't have a real cleared number one. I mean, Samsonov and Vanecek, I mean, neither of them are bad, I would say. But, I mean, that's an area where, I mean, the Penguins would have the Capitals beaten in goaltending.
Dave, jump in there on the Capitals. What do you like about that team? What would concern you if you're Peter Laviolette? And how do you think a Penguins-Capitals series would play out?
Well, I mean, while the Penguins, you know, on paper dominated the season series, four of the six games they won were either in 3-on-3 overtime or in a shootout, you know, neither of which is applicable in the playoffs. So, you know, I think it would be a relatively even matchup, even though the teams are pretty different. The Penguins, I think, have a pretty pronounced edge in speed. On a team basis, the Capitals are bigger and more physical. You know, the most recent games between the Penguins and Capitals, I think, showed that, you know, skating can tilt things in the Penguins' favor. But I mean, you have to keep in mind that Washington was missing two pretty important players in Ovechkin and John Carlson in those games. You know, coping with injuries is part of the challenge of succeeding in this league. But, you know, Washington is certainly a more formidable group when those two guys are playing. And there's, you know, no reason to question at this point that both should be back by the time the playoffs begin.
Yeah, I think that was, if you look at those, and I'm sorry, my wife is starting her car right now, backing out. If she hits anything, I'll let you know. I think of that, that's the series to me that would be, from a neutral standpoint, the most enjoyable. I think there would be a lot of goals. I think there would certainly be more goals than the other two opponents that could possibly in the docket. The only thing that would worry me about the Capitals is that they can score, that if they get behind, they can get back into games where I'm not too sure the other two can. Now let's move on. The Islanders, a team that last year went to the conference final. A team that I think when you look at the lineup, Taylor, nothing like scares you. Like, oh my gosh, if they can't take care of this player or that player, they're in trouble. But they are a veteran team. To me, they remind me as much of the 90s Devils. And maybe that's too easy of a comparison because Lou Lamoriello is the GM of both teams. But it does remind me of that kind of team, that team that if they can get a lead on you, they can make it very hard to get back in the game. And unlike Washington, they do have an experienced goalie. Your thoughts on the Islanders?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the goaltending matchup, that's one where, I mean, the Islanders probably would have them beat with Varlamov just the season he's had. But yeah, I mean, like you said, really defensive oriented team. Their penalty kill is pretty good. Not quite as good as the Bruins, one of the other teams, but I mean, yeah, just a very defensive minded team. That's another team though that the Penguins matched up pretty well against in the regular season. Now they also haven't played them since the trade deadline. So I mean, the Islanders do look, you know, a bit different since the trade deadline. So you know, not easy to say how they'd match up now, but I mean, during the regular season, like I said, they matched up, you know, they had a winning record against them in the regular season, but yeah, low scoring series. I mean, not unlike what the last, what was it, 2019, and the Penguins didn't fare well in that one. So
Dave, I look at this team and I'm not sure. Semyon Varlamov obviously has really good numbers, and this is taking nothing away from him, but their system is so good that there are nights when they're on their game that he doesn't have to make a lot of good saves. What do you see with this Islander group?
Oh, I see Barry Trotz's fingerprints all over it. Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of team that he had in Washington and that he, before that, in Nashville. Very stingy defensively. He almost always has good goaltending, which, you know, can to some extent be a byproduct of the way the teams play in front of the goaltender. But, you know, the interesting thing to me is I thought that they really helped themselves with their trade shortly before the deadline, where they brought in Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac from New Jersey. But those guys don't seem to have had the impact, you know, that a lot of us expected them to. And I believe Zajac has even been a healthy scratch a couple of times. Now, you know, they're both established veterans who could get their games back in order at any time, but I don't think they've been able to compensate for the absence of Anders Lee, which I think is a big part of what Lamoriello had in mind when he traded for those two.
Yeah, and you can look at their numbers, especially on the power play. I mean, Lee is such an important facet of that power play, and of course, why not? He's such a good player. That to me would be a much lower scoring series. And again, that you do tend to throw some numbers out the window in the regular season, but my goodness, I think they're like 23-1-3 when scoring first. It does speak to the level of how they play. They play the game when they're on their game, and how they limit chances. Just taking away the center of the ice. That's, to me, one of the reasons I like getting Jeff Carter, is that Carter is one of those guys, and we saw it on that deflection goal, the puck went off of him, that element that he brings to them with a little size, not toughness, but size of getting inside and scoring those kind of, can score a couple of those gritty goals. I think that would be a fascinating matchup. I still like the Capitals of these two, which brings us to the third team. The Boston Bruins were in all kind of trouble at the trade deadline. The Rangers were kind of breathing down their neck a little bit, and they have certainly been transformed since the deadline. They've been a very hot team. Now, granted, they've played a lot of games against Buffalo in there since then, but we also saw two really tight, low-scoring competitive games against the Penguins. Taylor, your thoughts on the Bruins?
Yeah, I mean, all season, a lack of secondary scoring has been their issue. Taylor Hall, alone doesn't really fix that, and that could, I guess, be a problem in a full series, more so. But I mean, as far as strengths, I mean, their penalty kill, it's top of the league now. I think it's been top of the league, you know, all season, just with the guys they have, Bergeron. I mean, we just went into Bergeron how long, I think a couple episodes ago. Just him. Line matchups could be interesting in that one. We've seen during the regular season, Sullivan really likes matching Crosby against their top line, which means we probably wouldn't see as much scoring from the top line, which again would be interesting in a playoff series. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that played out if that is the matchup.
Dave, the three goalies of the three teams left here, I think that we were saying with Washington, the goaltending, well, we're not quite sure what you're going to get game to game. Varlamov is certainly a proven commodity. Again, I still think some of the system is part of what makes him so good. There's no question about Tuukka Rask. When he's on his game, he's among the best in the league. Your thoughts on Rask first, and then the team itself, and what threat they would pose to the Penguins?
Oh, I think, you know, Rask, when he's healthy and as you put it, on his game, there are very few guys who are better. He can certainly steal a game and even a series for Boston. And while you never want to be a one-line team, if your one line is Patrice Bergeron between Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak, you're doing better than most. That's a really formidable group. You know, if David Krejci's second line can continue going the way it has been of late, that will make the Bruins an even more formidable challenge for whoever they play against. But as I say, if you only can have one line, that Bergeron unit is a pretty good group for it to be.
Okay, quickly, both of you guys, the one team you want to avoid, Taylor, if the Penguins could avoid, what team in the first round you think they would have a better chance?
I think I'd want to avoid the Islanders.
You want to avoid the Islanders?
Yeah, I would want to avoid the Islanders. I mean, in order, I'd want them to play Capitals, Bruins, and then Islanders. I know Islanders last.
Yeah, Dave.
I want them to avoid the Islanders just because I don't want to go back to Long Island.
That's not allowed. That is not going to be in this court. We're striking that from the record.
If I'm the Penguins, I probably would not want to play the Bruins in the first round.
Okay.
I'd want to play the Capitals just because I want chicken lo mein from Chinatown.
I'll stick with what I'm going to stay with what I've said. I still think that Boston is their best matchup, but I certainly, the way they've been playing since the trade deadline and Tuukka Rask certainly gives you pause. I think what we're all saying here is there's no easy matchup, right? There is no easy matchup in this division. The teams are really very even. But I do like the Penguins' chances. I really feel much better about this team going into the playoffs than I have in recent years. Jeff Carter is playing, really has been a nice addition. And, of course, the unknown, of course, is what Evgeny Malkin is going to give them. All right, when we come back, we will have Wayne Fish, spent 45 years covering the Philadelphia Flyers. And I don't think Wayne has seen a season quite like this one. Stay tuned here on the 66 to 87 podcast. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast. We are delighted to be joined by Wayne Fish, who has been covering the Flyers for 45 years. Wayne, that has mostly been or all at the Bucks County Courier Times, or are there other places as well?
No, I started there on the newspaper in 1971 and took over the beat late in 76. In 2017, the company was bought out by USA. Well, actually, it was bought out by Gatehouse, not to make a long story, too long a story here, but USA Today Network bought this particular chain. So now that I started my own company, flyingfishhockey.com, but I also now continue to write for USA Today Network, which includes the Courier Times, the Doylestown Intelligencer, and the Burlington County Times, which are all located in the same general area.
Gotcha. Okay. You know, so one of the things I wanted to establish here is you have been following this team for a long, long time, back to the Cup years. Have you ever seen a season in which it started pretty well? Obviously, the Flyers were kind of expected to be a pretty good team based on last season, and seen one go off the rails like this at mid-year?
You're right. To this extent, no. I have not seen something this dramatic. I think you have to put an asterisk next to it, though, because this team got hit with the COVID-19 probably in the top five of the NHL. They lost four games that had to be rescheduled and lost about eight players. And it's dramatic. The numbers before were like 8-3-2. And then in March, they were 6-10-1. So if you go by the analytics, that was unprecedented. And I think that had something to do with it. The players and the coaches all tried not to use that as an excuse, but I think that's the number one.
Okay, you stolen a little bit of the thunder for my second question, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway. You know, I think from the outsider's view, beyond the COVID issues, a lot of this is going to be about Carter Hart, and we're going to ask you a question a little bit about Carter more specifically. But what else? It seems like the issues run a little bit deeper than they're not getting great goaltending, the goaltending they got last year. When you look at this roster and some of the games in which they have been just absolutely blown out in, what else ails this team?
I'll throw a name at you that you probably will recognize. His name is Matt Niskanen. And
yes,
his sudden retirement really gave this team a punch to the jaw, because not only was he very good on the ice, but he was also a very calming influence in that locker room. And you can talk about the leadership of this team with Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek and Sean Couturier, but Matt was the de facto captain of this team. And I've seen it before. I saw it with Mike Richards and Chris Pronger. When the door opened, the media went immediately to Pronger to get all the inside information, all the reaction. And that's nothing against Mike Richards. It's nothing against Claude Giroux. But Matt Niskanen was the guy that the media flocked to get this great shot after a tough loss. On the ice, he was a very calming influence as well, being the partner with Ivan Provorov, especially on special teams. And I'll give you a quick two stats here. They're 30th on the penalty kill. They're 21st on the power play. Last year, both of those numbers were dramatically different, 11th and 14th or something like that. So, again, I think that it may be putting too much, maybe putting a little bit too much emphasis on that, but that's the one thing that struck me, was that Niskanen, his sudden retirement really hurt this team.
Going back to Carter Hart, I mean, just what happened with him, and is he fixable? Can he still be the guy moving forward?
Good question. I think that's the one that the media here is anxious to find out. I'm going to say something that maybe a lot of people don't agree with back here, and that is that I'm not sure that the coach and the goalie are on the same page. And it seems like he is not a happy camper. When we talk to him, it just seems like he didn't reach his comfort level this year. And it's puzzling because he had a strong finish last year in the playoffs. They got within one game of the Eastern Conference Final. It started off well this year, and then for some reason, it went off the tracks a little bit. I wish I could tell you that there's something there but I think that a couple of people have told me that there's a little bit of friction there, not necessarily between Vigneault and Hart, but maybe just the coaching staff and Hart. And so we'll have to see. I mean, he's had two good years, a solid body of work, and maybe they can write this off as just an anomaly. But it'll be interesting to see in camp. There's going to be some challenges, I think, for his starting spot.
Looking around, the rest of the roster, do you think they start the next season with Giroux, Voracek, and Couturier still on the lineup, or do you see, you know, significant changes coming over the summer?
The one caveat to moving one of those guys is that Giroux has a no-move clause, and he would have to agree to be traded, at least on paper. And there's so much being written right now about the fact that he's approaching or passing these milestones. He just passed Clark for the game served as captain. He just moved into third place on the all-time scoring list. And, you know, it's very rare that a player stays in one place. Unless you're a Crosby or a Ovechkin, chances are you're going to get moved sometime in your career. So I wouldn't put that out of the realm of possibility. I think the one player who of those three would be Voracek. But his contract is unwieldy. He still has 3 years left at $8 million a year. So I'm not sure anybody wants to take on that cash. That said, I think that management has to take a hard look at this and decide if they have enough secondary guns to keep the offense going. Because right now, Jake Voracek is leading the team with 40 points, but he's a minus 15. So that pretty much tells you how this season went.
Wayne, I could see Pittsburgh trading for Voracek just so they don't have to play against him again. He's feasted on them for a lot of years. Right. If there aren't any major changes on the ice, could you see something happening with Fletcher or Vigneault, or, you know, do they have the approval of ownership going forward?
Dave, I would say this. The last two coaches who were here were untested coming in. No, Craig Berube and Dave Hakstol were untested commodities. And so they became sort of the whipping boys of the failures of this team. This team hasn't been to the playoffs 2 years in a row since 2012. And I just noticed in the other day when Pittsburgh clinched, I think it's 15 years in a row for the Penguins, if I'm not mistaken. So that tells you a little bit about the inconsistency of this organization. And I don't think they want to make another change here. It just looks like they're like a revolving door of coaches. And so Vigneault is a proven commodity. He's been to the Stanley Cup Finals twice. And I think that to your point earlier about the fact that they may look hard at the leadership group, I think that's the determining factor. The fact that this coach is not the problem. It's maybe the frontline players and maybe that second tier of Konechny, Nolan Patrick, Kevin Hayes. Those are the kind of players that you might be looking at too.
Wayne, excellent stuff. We really appreciate your input. I know it's been a hard year. You're probably ready for offseason just as much as some of these players. So enjoy the rest of the time, and I hope for your sake it's you get a little downtime, because it's for all of the beat writers. It has been a long, hard season, even in a condensed year. So appreciate your time very much, and that's it. For this edition of the 66 to 87 podcast, for our guest Wayne Fish, for Taylor Haas and Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed. We'll talk to you later in the week.